The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 18, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Affair of the Dying Schoolboys. Episode 2, The Genuine Gunnerius. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels. Featuring narration by Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Tonic and Kreml Shampoo present the New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Once again, it's time to call on our old friend, that incomparable host and storyteller, Dr. Watson. He's waiting for us in his familiar study. Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening, Mr. Bell. I won't get up if you don't mind. This change in the weather has given me a twinge or two of rheumatism, I'm afraid.
No, I'm sorry to hear that, Dr. Watson.
We old fossils can't expect to be as hale and hearty as you young fellows, you know.
I don't know that I feel so young today, Dr. Watson. I stopped by the military academy this afternoon and saw my cousin there. He's 13 years old, and after an hour with him, I realized I'm really quite ancient.
13 years old. Oh, a fine age. He's happy at the school, Mr. Bell?
Crazy about it.
Yes, I'm sure that in this day and age, a boy almost looks forward to going to school. Conditions were far different in certain parts of England just before the turn of the century, I'm afraid. I'm thinking in particular of a school that Holmes and I had occasion to visit, and of the frightened, unhappy youngsters who lived there in mortal terror of their lives.
Oh, this has all the hallmarks of the beginning of a Sherlock Holmes adventure.
It is, my boy. It's a story I call The Singular Affair of the Dying Schoolboys.
Now, Dr. Watson, how about the singular affair of the dying schoolboy?
Well, Mr. Bell, that strange adventure began on a stormy September evening in Baker Street many, many years ago. All day long the wind had screamed and the rain had beaten against our windows. Shortly after dinner, there was the old familiar jangle on our front doorbell. And a few moments later, Mrs. Hudson ushered a distinguished visitor into the room. As he stood there in front of the flickering firelight, I could see that he was a good-looking man and also that he was in a state of considerable excitement.
Now, Lord Manders, if you will just give us the facts.
Well, Mr. Holmes, 3 years ago, I was a passenger on that ill-fated ship, the Sophie Anderson. She was wrecked in the gale and I was the only survivor. I clung to a piece of broken spar and was washed ashore. And after that, for over 2 years, I lived alone on an island in the Indian Ocean. Naturally, when the Sophie Anderson foundered, I was believed to be dead. My young brother, Eric, who was next in line, inherited the estate and the guardianship of our uncle.
There must have been quite a lot of confusion when you arrived home this year, Lord Manders.
There was, Dr. Watson, but not for the reason you suppose. I landed in England to find that my brother had died last December.
Oh, indeed, I am very sorry.
He died under very peculiar circumstances. That's why I've come to you, Mr. Holmes.
What were those circumstances?
My uncle sent Eric to a school on the Welsh Moors, not far from Cardiff. A school known as Ponsonby Hall. He died in the school infirmary there, supposedly of pneumonia.
And you have some reason to believe it was not pneumonia?
Nothing definite. I've been down to the school, but Dr. Ponsonby, the owner, was too ill to see me. However, I did talk to a frightening woman there who's the matron of the place, a Mrs. Arkwright. I became suspicious, so I stayed on and for a few days made some local inquiries.
With what results?
Ponsonby Hall has a black name with the villagers, Mr. Holmes. 5 boys have died there in the last 2 years under circumstances similar to my brother's.
Good gracious me.
I presume that you immediately had an accounting with your uncle?
My uncle had settled another account before my return, Mr. Holmes. He died of a heart attack last February. But I am certain he was responsible for Eric's death. You see, he stood to inherit the estate. It may sound incredible, but I believe Eric was murdered at Ponsonby Hall.
Murdered in a boys' school? Oh, come, 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 sir. Such things can't happen in this 19th century of ours.
But they can, Watson. And do, unfortunately.
You don't mean it.
I do. A private school situated in a desolate spot and operated by an unprincipled scoundrel could provide excellent and profitable opportunities for removing unwanted relatives.
What a ghastly thought.
Mr. Holmes, I know that Eric's dead and nothing can bring him to life again. But I can try and avenge his death and bring his murderer to justice. You will help me, won't you?
Yes, Lord Manders, I will. If these shocking occurrences have been taking place, we may be able at least to prevent further tragedies. Watson, suppose we join Lord Manders on the West of England Express tonight and tomorrow see what can be done to penetrate the black clouds that surround Ponsonby Hall.
Walking in the wrong direction, Mr. Holmes. The school's behind us.
And before going there, I thought we might profitably pay a visit here in the village to Llewellyn Coffin.
Well, who's he?
The local undertaker.
An undertaker in Coffin? That's very funny, isn't it? Coffin, undertaker.
Quite. But try and control your amusement, will you, Watson?
Oh, sorry, Holmes.
Here's his establishment now.
Good day, gentlemen.
Mr. Coffin?
Yes, sir. That's my name, Coffin.
We're strangers in these parts, and we're in search of information. I'm hoping, Mr. Coffin, that you'll be able to help us.
What I can do, sir, I will, and do it gladly.
I understand that you've had an unusually large proportion of business from Ponsonby Hall in the past 2 years.
Five boys died, didn't they?
Five boys it was.
Mr. Coffin, we've heard some strange stories in the village.
Yes, stories that make us wonder if those deaths were from natural causes.
Gentlemen, I'm a simple man, look you. A man who plies his trade but cannot afford to ask questions. What goes on at Ponsonby Hall, and I'll not say strange things haven't happened there, is none of my business.
Then let me appeal to your sympathies. My young brother died at Ponsonby Hall last December. You must have buried him.
Your brother? Well, now look you, that makes it different. But you'll not say anything up at the hall, sir. Dr. Ponsonby's a savage man.
Don't worry on that score, Mr. Coffin.
What do you have to know him, sir?
All the five boys were supposed to have had pneumonia, I understand.
That's what the medical report said.
Who signed those reports?
Dr. Ponsonby himself. He's a regular medical doctor, look you.
How very convenient. No questions had to be asked. Mr. Coffin, when you prepared those bodies for burial, did you notice anything unusual about them? Anything to make you think their deaths were possibly not caused by pneumonia?
No, sir.
Think now.
Think, well, now that you mention it, there was one thing I was after noticing.
Oh, what was that, my good man?
The boys had a strange look on their faces as they lay there. As if something had frightened the wits out of them just before they died.
That's very odd. The face of anyone dying from pneumonia would be in repose.
Did you notice anything else, Mr. Coffin? Any other peculiarity?
Well, there was one thing, sir, that gave me to thinking. All the boys had marks on them. Stretch marks, they were, on their necks or shoulders.
Perhaps they were bites. Remember Dr. Rylett of Stoke Moran, Holmes?
Did these marks look like the bites of a snake, Mr. Coffin?
No, that they weren't. Look, you, I know a snake bite when I see one.
Didn't these marks make you suspicious?
That they did, sir. And when I saw them on the boys, I took my courage in my hands and asked Dr. Ponsonby.
And what did he say?
Inoculation marks. He said that he had tried to save them with some newfangled medicine.
No autopsy was held on the boys?
No, sir. Dr. Ponsonby is the only doctor in these parts, look you. He gave the certificates. Who was to ask any questions?
Exactly. Come on, Watson, Lord Manders. This has been a very promising start. Thank you, Mr. Coffin. You've been most helpful.
It was a pleasure to talk to you, gentlemen. But please don't be after repeating what I said.
Well, Mr. Holmes, I think you'll agree my suspicions were well-grounded.
Yes. And we'll lose no time investigating this matter. I think we may work faster if we divide our forces. I shall return to the inn and compose a telegram that I shall ask you to send for me, Lord Manders.
Of course, Mr. Holmes.
Aren't you going to Ponsonby Hall, Holmes?
Not immediately. However, you, my dear Watson, can be my advance guard.
Me?
Yes. I think that your open countenance, combined with that delightful Scottish accent you sometimes assume, plus an appropriate name, should lull Dr. Ponsonby into believing that he has another wealthy customer who needs his very specialized services.
Well, Holmes, I'll do my best. Just the same, I'll be very relieved when you get on the scene.
I'm Mrs. Arkwright, the school matron. Whom did you wish to see?
I want to have a word with Dr. Ponsonby. My name is Angus McLaughlin, and I'm most anxious to send my young cousin here.
Oh?
Aye, he needs discipline. And I'm told that you dinner pamper a young lad here.
Please come in. I'm sure Dr. Ponsonby will see you.
Thank you, Mrs. Ackley.
Come in.
Go in, please.
Dr. Ponsonby?
Yes, please sit down, won't you?
Thank you, sir. My name is Angus McLaughlin. I've traveled all the way from Aberdeen to see you. I was told that at your school, you at least know how to discipline a lad.
Well, Mr. McLaughlin, in our modest way, we endeavor to inculcate our students with a sense of responsibility.
Aye.
I was about to have a glass of wine. Perhaps you'd care to join me?
That's very kind of you, Dr. Benson. I'd like to.
You wish to send a relative here, Mr. McLaughlin?
Aye, sir. A young cousin of mine, if you'll take him.
Here's your wine, Mr. McLaughlin.
Thank you, sir. And to your very good health. That's very good.
Tell me more about your cousin, sir. Before I accept a new student, I like to know as much about him as possible.
Well, I'll be quite frank with you. He's 13 years old and he's a young devil. And an inconvenient young devil, too. You see, Dr. Ponsonby, I'm his guardian. You follow me?
No, sir, I don't think I do.
Well, I'll be perfectly honest with you. I'm not a poor man. And I'd be a very wealthy one if it weren't for that boy. The whippersnapper is the only person who stands between me and my dead brother's fortune. I wouldn't be sorry if anything were to happen to him. Am I making myself quite clear, Doctor?
Much clearer, Mr. McLaughlin. Another glass of wine?
Thank you. Well, it's very good.
Mr. McLaughlin, why not put all your cards on the table? So much simpler that way.
Very well. Does £10,000 mean anything to you, Dr. Ponsonby?
Dear me, yes. The scholastic profession is notoriously unremunerative.
If my young cousin were to be taken ill, perhaps, shall we say, with pneumonia, if he were to die here at your school, I'd pay you £10,000. Now, sir, I can't be more explicit than that. No, can I?
I don't think so. By the way, Mr. McLaughlin, your Scottish accent is beginning to disappear. Such a pity. It was quite colourful.
Wine's drugs. You haven't touched your wine's drugs.
I'm a most abstemious man. Particularly on occasions like this, Dr. Watson.
How did you know my name?
Even in this remote spot, I've seen photographs of you and your friend, the famous Sherlock Holmes. I'm just a little hurt that you both thought I was stupid enough to be fooled so easily. You seem dreadfully sleepy, Dr. Watson.
Sleep, I've got to go to sleep.
And sleep well, my friend. I only hope that you don't have too much trouble waking up.
And now, Act Two of the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, Dr. Watson, you certainly left me teetering on the edge of my chair. We left you drugged in the schoolmaster's study. What happened next?
Well, my first conscious recollection was to find myself with a violent pounding in my head, lying in a small clearing between some trees. Bending over me with a look of deep concern on his face was my old friend Sherlock Holmes.
Watson.
Uh-huh.
Watson, old chap, are you all right?
Yes, I got a frightful headache, Holmes. What are you doing there in those clothes with that droopy moustache?
It proved a good enough passport to secure me employment at the stables here.
How did you get me out of Ponsonby's study?
The stables command an excellent view of the school building. Your long absence worried me, and when Dr. Ponsonby finally appeared, alone, I became suspicious. So I took advantage of his absence, slipped through the study window, and rescued you.
Well, thank heavens you did. He gave me drugged wine. It's a funny thing, Holmes. I was probably delirious, but I swear that I saw a woman's handbag on the table. A pink and black beaded bag, And it was alive and moved.
Great heavens! That confirms my worst suspicions.
Did you see it too?
No, it wasn't there when I came in. Somebody, probably Mrs. Arkwright, removed it. Watson, you were never closer to death. I blame myself for having allowed you to tackle Dr. Punsonby alone.
Don't reproach yourself, Holmes. Where's Lord Manders?
Waiting at the inn for an answer to my telegram. He is to meet us later behind the lodge gates.
What's our next move?
To go to the stables, dirty you up a bit and get you a change of clothes. Then we'll return to the attack. There's desperate work ahead of us. What, my man?
Don't look so alarmed, Lord Manders.
Dr. Watson, I wouldn't have recognized you. What's happened?
Trouble. I had to assume a disguise, too. You brought an answer to Holmes's telegram?
Yes, in my pocket. Where is he?
He went over to the main school building and asked me to keep watch for you here at the gates. Oh, here he is now.
Is there an answer to my telegram, Lord Manders?
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
Yeah. Splendid. I was right.
What is it, Holmes?
I haven't time to explain now. At the moment, we have to work, and work fast. Before Mr. Coffin has another client from Punsonby Hall.
What have you discovered?
Among other things, that the second cook, an acidulated woman of dubious charms, is most susceptible to flattery. Over a glass of stout, she quite inadvertently gave me three vital clues.
What were they?
Firstly, that all five of the unfortunate boys died in the same small room. Secondly, that fatal room is directly under the room of Mrs. Arkwright.
And she's capable of anything, if you ask me.
The third clue makes our next step an urgent one. A boy by the name of Carruthers Minor was moved into that room yesterday. He's supposed to have an extremely bad cold. Dr. Punsonby is afraid it might turn into pneumonia.
Good heavens!
Exactly, Watson. I suggest we lose no time in visiting Carruthers Minor. Though I'm sure Dr. Punsonby would consider it unethical, this is one occasion when another doctor's opinion is absolutely vital. There, Carruthers. This is Dr. Watson. He's come to make you well.
You can't make me well. Dr. Punsonby says I've got pneumonia.
Oh, nonsense, my dear boy. You've got a slight cold, that's all.
If Dr. Punsonby says I've got pneumonia, pneumonia's what I've got.
Nothing of the kind, my boy. Nothing of the kind.
Watson, you notice this bed is anchored to the floor? It can't be moved. What does that suggest to you?
Well, again, it reminds me of Tuck Moran and Dr. Rylett. But I don't see any bell pull.
No, Watson. No bell rope is needed, because no murderous snake is involved in this plot. But look up there, directly above the bed.
A small trapdoor.
Leading from Mrs. Arkwright's room. Now the whole picture's clear. The trapdoor, the strange marks on the dead boys, the beaded bag that you saw.
What was that?
I don't know. Lord Manders is standing guard in the hallway.
It's Dr. Ponsonby. He's come to look at my pneumonia.
Mrs. Arkwright.
I know you were expecting Lord Manders. He's lying in the hallway. He was looking in the wrong direction. Unfortunately for him.
Don't let Mrs. Arkwright come near me. Don't let her.
Mrs. Arkwright, I'd put that revolver away if I were you. I doubt if you know how to handle it.
I assure you that I do. Having used the butt end of it on your friend so successfully should prove that fact.
Reverend Watson.
Right, you are.
Get away from me.
Drop that revolver, Mrs. Arkwright.
Arkwright, and the other have it.
Drop that revolver, do you hear me? Ah, that's better. I say, Holmes, she's fainted.
Good. Help me carry her up to her room.
Well, what about young Carruthers and Lord Manders?
We must remove them to a place of safety. And then, Watson, all that remains is to call on the giggling Dr. Punsonby.
It's very dark in here, Holmes. I don't like this at all.
Quiet. Somebody's coming. Good evening, Dr. Punsonby. Let me light your desk lamp for you.
You startled me. Who are you? What are you doing in my study?
My name is Sherlock Holmes. Dr. Watson, you've already met.
Yes, we've met, you scoundrel.
Oh, yes. My friend, the Scotsman. I was expecting you both. By the way, please put that revolver away. Firearms make me nervous.
Dr. Punsonby, I know how those five boys were murdered. I would venture the opinion that you once spent some time for the sake of your health in America. In Arizona Territory, I'd say.
I wonder what makes you think that, Mr. Holmes. I've never been in America in my life.
life.
And yet I'm certain that someone here spent some time in the vicinity of the Gila River.
Well, I understand that Mrs. Arkwright was in America a few years ago.
Mrs. Arkwright? Dr. Ponsonby, is it possible you're hoping to transfer our suspicions to your accomplice?
My accomplice? You talk in riddles, Mr. Holmes. It's most confusing.
Then shall we be more specific? You consider Carruthers Minor to be quite ill, I understand.
Oh, yes, I'm dreadfully worried about him.
Well, then let me tell you, Dr. Ponsonby, that I examined the boy only a few minutes ago, and as a medical man, I say that he only has a slight cold.
Then obviously we disagree in our diagnosis, Dr. Watson. After all, you're just a general practitioner, whereas I specialize...
Yes, we know what you specialize in.
Gentlemen, I suggest the three of us go over to Carruthers' room and hold a consultation. It's just possible that his health has taken a sudden turn for the better.
But the bed's empty. Carruthers Minor has gone.
Yes, Dr. Ponsonby. And suppose you take his place.
Oh, and I've got him home.
Leave me alone. What are you about to do?
Lash you to this bed and see if you can stomach your own filthy medicine.
This is outrageous.
Of course. I thought that if we were to reconstruct your crimes with you as the victim, we might persuade you to confess.
Mrs. Arkwright! Mrs. Arkwright, help!
I'm afraid she can't help you. She's in her room with the door locked from the outside.
There we are, Holmes. He's latched up so that he can't move.
But you don't understand. Mrs. Arkwright has been stuck.
Great heavens! What was that?
Mrs. Arkwright, it came from the room above. Come on, Watson. Quick, up the stairs.
She's fainted again.
Feel her pulse.
I just got you. Holmes, there is no pulse. She's dead.
The poison works fast. Observe those marks on her wrist.
Looks as if some animal had bitten it.
It has. And that means the animal's loose in this room.
Great heavens!
Somehow it must have escaped from its cage and turned on her. Guard the door, Watson. Our lives are not safe until we've found this monster.
I don't understand.
Look. Look! Under that washstand there.
Good heavens, it's that beaded handbag again. And it's moving.
Give me your walking stick, Watson.
Here.
There. This diabolical creature has done enough damage for one lifetime.
It's dead, Holmes. But what in thunder is it? It looks like some sort of lizard. It's all pink and covered all over with black scales. That's what made me think it was a handbag. But I've never seen a lizard as large as that.
Of course you haven't. So let me introduce you to the peculiar villain of this piece. His name is Heloderma suspectum, better known as the Gila monster, indigenous to the Gila River in America.
I've never seen anything like that before. How on earth did you recognize it, Holmes?
When Mr. Coffin, the undertaker, mentioned those strange marks on the dead boys, I was reminded of an article I'd read recently on venomous lizards.
So that telegram you sent
was to the Museum of Natural History. Their answer confirmed my suspicions. The Gila monster's bite produces almost instantaneous death, and yet it's a poison that would be extremely hard to identify. The fixed bed in the room below us, the trap door directly above it in this room, and the help of an unscrupulous accomplice like Mrs. Arkwright makes the rest of the picture very clear.
And now that the monster's dead, how are you going to frighten Dr. Ponsonby into a confession?
Now, Dr. Ponsonby need not know the animal's dead. Examine the floor, Watson. See if you can find that trap door.
Right, you are, Holmes.
Meanwhile, I'll see if I can find some cord or string. Uh-huh. Here's a ball of twine on the dressing table, placed there for use in the intended murder of Carruthers Minor, no doubt.
Found the trap, Holmes. There's a ring here in the floor and a section of the carpet's been cut out.
Good. And now to attach the twine to the body of the Gila monster. So, all right, Watson, open the trap door.
Very well, Holmes.
Well, Dr. Ponsonby, have you changed your mind?
Mrs. Arkwright! Mrs. Arkwright!
She is dead, Dr. Ponsonby. Your Gila monster turned on her.
No! No!
I'm going to lower the animal, Watson. There we are.
Oh, get away from me!
Just a few more feet will do the trick, Holmes.
Yes. There.
Take it away! I tell you anything! Everything!
You'll sign a confession?
Yes, Mr. Holmes, yes, I will! Just take that beast away, I'll tell anything!
We'll be down, Dr. Ponsonby.
Well, Holmes, thank heavens that's done with. What a shocking affair.
Yes, Watson, but not without a note of poetic justice.
What do you mean?
Well, isn't it poetic justice that a dead reptile should be instrumental in bringing a live one to the gallows?
Quite a gruesome finale, Dr. Watson.
It certainly was, Mr. Bell. All in all, one of the most unpleasant adventures that Holmes and I ever encountered. Next week, I think I'll tell you the adventure of the genuine Garnierius, in which Holmes solved the mystery of Drenko, a famous violinist, who was found dead in a locked room clutching a suicide note, but who nevertheless had been murdered.
Tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Speckled Band. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures, Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo, and inviting you to be with us next week at this same time when Dr. Watson will tell us about the adventure of the genuine Garnierius. Tonic and Kremel Shampoo presents the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes, starring Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson and Tom Conway as Sherlock Holmes. Now, once again, it's time for our weekly visit to Dr. Watson, genial friend and colleague of the great Sherlock Holmes. Good evening, Dr. Watson. I trust I'm not intruding.
Not at all, my dear fellow, not at all. Sit down, won't you?
Thank you. You know, Dr. Watson, I've been struck by the remarkably large number of signed photographs of titled personages and notables that ornament the walls of your study. Mementos of your active career, I presume.
Yes, although I must admit most of them are clients of Sherlock Holmes rather than grateful patients of mine.
Well, now, this picture, for instance. Naturally, I recognize the photograph of the late Royal...
No names, Mr. Bell, I beg you. Holmes and I always referred to the gentleman in question merely as Mr. Edwards.
And what did you and Mr. Holmes do to cause his royal... Mr. Edwards to inscribe his photograph in such affectionate gratitude?
Nothing of any great importance, I assure you. Merely that Mr. Edwards had become a trifle entangled, shall we say, with a little dancer at Maxim's in Paris. A young lady rejoicing in the appellation of Frou-Frou. Quite a delightful little bit of fluff, too.
I gather that Sherlock Holmes settled the matter to Mr. Edwards' complete satisfaction.
Very easily and very discreetly. But it led us into one of the most curious and singular affairs of Sherlock Holmes' career. And one which I don't believe would ever have been solved had Holmes not been a distinguished amateur on the violin. I call it The Adventure of the Genuine Garnierius.
Sounds intriguing, Dr. Watson. Now, Dr. Watson, how about the adventure of the genuine Garnierius?
Well, the British ambassador to France, Sir Hubert Ashley, had invited Holmes and myself to a reception at the embassy in Paris in order to thank us both for successfully concluding the rather delicate affair of Mr. Edwards. The ballroom was a blaze of light. The guests were dancing. By Jove, Holmes, have you ever seen anyone more attractive than our host's wife? I must say that Lady Ashley is really the finest type of English beauty.
Sometimes, Watson, I envy the directness of your mind.
What do you mean?
When you look at a beautiful woman, you see only beauty.
What on earth would you expect me to see?
In the case of Lady Ashley, my dear fellow, I notice her elderly husband, her many gallant admirers, and I think, what a motive for murder.
Oh, really, Holmes?
Holmes, I trust our guest of honor is enjoying himself.
Very much indeed, Lady Ashley.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, may I introduce a very dear friend, Monsieur Jacques Merivaux, who has known me more years than I care to remember.
How do you do? Yes, I think I can claim to be Lady Ashley's most devoted cavalier, having first made her acquaintance when she was just over 2 hours old. She wept bitterly the moment she saw me.
Yes, but I've been trying to make up to him for it ever since.
During the time we're in Paris, Monsieur Marigot, I've been promising myself the pleasure of a visit to your famous music shop.
I should be honored, Monsieur Holmes. I've heard, of course, that you play the violin.
Nearly as the veriest amateur. Incidentally, I'm looking forward eagerly to hearing Monsieur Drenko play this evening, Lady Ashley. I was unfortunately out of London during the only recital he gave this season.
He's a great artist.
Yes, he comes from one of those little countries down the right-hand corner of the map, doesn't he? I've always heard the fellow's a bit of a babbler.
You'll have an opportunity to judge at once, Watson. Our host is approaching with a gentleman in question in tow.
Ah, Holmes, there you are. Monsieur Drenko has been asking to meet you. Monsieur Drenko, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Hubert, if you'll excuse me, I must see to our other guests. Until later, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
Oh, yes, indeed, of course.
Dr. Watson and I are looking forward to hearing you play, Mr. Drinko.
I always enjoy an appreciative audience. Tell me, Mr. Holmes, might I speak to you alone for a moment?
Come along, Merivale. You promised me your opinion on that 83 champagne.
No, it's a sound business, but...
Well, Mr. Drinko?
I said alone, Mr. Holmes.
I have no secrets from Dr. Watson.
Very well, then. It so happens that I find myself in a slight predicament. I thought that with all your experience, you might advise me.
As a social favor, Mr. Drenko? Gladly. If, of course, you would like to come to tea at my hotel tomorrow and bring your violin to entertain my guests.
I beg your pardon. Oh. I understand, Mr. Holmes. We professionals must each respect the other's métier, must we not?
It would be preferable.
Yes, I told you what sort of fellow he was.
Nevertheless, Mr. Holmes, I still ask for your advice, and I will expect to pay the customary fee. You see, I find myself a trifle involved. Only a harmless flirtation, of course, but I did write one or two indiscreet letters to one of the girls at Maxim's, and... Now the greedy little thing threatens blackmail.
Hardly an unusual situation, Mr. Drinko.
For myself, for my reputation, I do not care, you understand. An artist is an artist. But there is my wife at home. I must think of her, naturally.
You're thinking of her a trifle late, aren't you, woman?
So you can see that there might be unpleasant results if Fufu were to...
Fufu of Maxim's?
You know her.
We are not unacquainted with the young person, Holmes.
From my rather brief acquaintance with her, I think the matter may be settled. Rather simply.
Ah, well, I shall be happy if you will handle the affair.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Monsieur Drenko, whom we're all very happy to welcome here this evening, will now give us the pleasure of his incomparable music.
Gentlemen, Mademoiselle Frufru's dressing room, right here.
Oh, Papa.
I say, Holmes, did you notice that girl we just passed? The one wearing just those little thingamajigs?
Quite. I also noticed, Watson, that backstage at Maxim seems to be one place where you not only see, but also observe very closely.
Hello, Monsieur Holmes.
Good evening.
I have not expected to see you and that cute little Dr. Watson again so soon. But perhaps this time it is pleasure, huh? Not business?
I'm afraid not, Mademoiselle Frufru.
Mademoiselle Frufru, it was only because I thought the gentleman we have agreed to refer to as Mr. Edwards was at least as culpable as you that I persuaded the French police not to prosecute you in that matter of his mother's jewels.
No, but, Monsieur Holmes, that didn't matter. We have settled it, have we not?
The charge is still pending, mademoiselle, and that a word from me could be followed up.
But why should you?
I also happen to know that the Marsovian embassy is most curious regarding the attraction which brings Prince Danilo so frequently to Paris. That also does not concern me at the moment. Assuming, of course, that you return at once all the letters that were written to you by Monsieur Drenko, and that you cease from molesting him anymore.
Oh, je comprends très bien, I see. Well, Monsieur Holmes, since you have put it so convincingly, I am rather tired of listening to a sorrowfully played violin. Monsieur Drenko may have his letters back. Here they are.
Thank you, mademoiselle. I knew you were a sensible girl. Good night.
Bonjour, merci. Si jamais vous reveniez tôt, ce sera trop tôt, je vous laisse.
And now what?
And now for a good night's rest. And in the morning, we can report to Mr. Drinko the satisfactory solution of what was perhaps our simplest problem.
Well, I hope you charge him a stiff fee, Holmes. I still say that that fellow's a bounder.
Good morning. I think Monsieur Drinko is expecting us. Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson. What's the number of his room, please?
Click, click. sent a message to the police.
Oh, Mr. Holmes.
Mr. Marigold, what's the matter?
Mr. Trinko.
We were on our way up to see him.
He's dead. Killed himself.
What? Good heavens. Come, Marigold. Take us up to his room.
The man's been dead for more than half an hour, Holmes. Closer to an hour, I should say.
I see. Marigold, would you please ask that chap we passed, the one who was painting the hall, to step in here for a moment?
But of course.
Curious. I wonder what could have been Drenko's motive in committing suicide.
Here is the phantom, Monsieur Holmes.
Ah, yes. Tell me, have you been working there all morning?
Huh? Oui, monsieur, ever since 8 o'clock.
For over 2 hours, in other words. And were you working constantly in sight of this door?
Absolutely, monsieur. I heard the gentleman in here practicing the violin for a while, but he stopped almost an hour ago.
That puts the time of death to just about what I thought, Holmes.
And you saw no one enter or leave this room during the entire time?
No one. Oh, except 5 minutes ago, this gentleman went into the room. A few seconds later, came running out, calling for the police.
Thank you. Your statement has been very clear. You may go now, but better not leave the hotel. No doubt the police will want to question you.
Très bien, monsieur.
I have never had such a shock in my life, Monsieur Holmes. I came up to deliver a new violin that Drenko had ordered. And when I opened the floor and saw him lying there with his face all twisted up in agony...
Yes, the common appearance of cyanide poisoning. Not very pretty, I'll admit. You'll note the characteristic odor of bitter almonds, Watson.
Yes, indeed, and here's the empty bottle.
Quite. The poison label on it removes any possibility of accident.
Nobody could possibly have got in or out through the window. The sheer drop of 4 stories to the street.
Look, Mr. Holmes, this torn piece of paper. I found it here on the desk. It's a suicide note.
Evidently written under the stress of considerable emotion, to judge from the writing. It is intolerable. I utterly refuse to endure it any longer. Signed, Mihail Drenko.
It's his handwriting, Mr. Holmes. I swear to it.
Yes. Unquestionably the perfect setting for suicide.
No doubt about it.
Ah, well, Monsieur Holmes. A pleasure to meet you again, even under such unfortunate circumstances.
How are you, Inspector Bernard?
Nice to see you again, my dear fellow.
Oh, thank you.
Dr. Watson and I have been carrying on for you until your arrival.
Oh, thank you. And may I pick your brains to ask what you have learned?
Marivaux here discovered the body only a few minutes ago when he arrived to deliver a violin Drenko had ordered. The painter you'll find out in the hall has had the room under observation all morning and will assure you that no one else entered or left it.
The fellow stopped practicing about an hour before. Sets the time of death pretty accurately. Here's his suicide note, Inspector. I'm afraid we're presenting you with rather an open and shut case.
Oh, well, Dr. Watson, a hard-working officer like myself welcomes the absence of any mystery.
And here's the violin that Drenko was practicing on.
Let me see it, Watson. Odd. Very odd indeed.
You mean odd that Drenko should be practicing the violin until just before he killed himself?
No, Inspector. That fact by itself would merely be singular. But listen to the violin on which he was practicing.
Sounds all right to me.
I confess, Monsieur Holmes, that I find no mystery in a man playing the violin just before he kills himself.
Perhaps, Inspector, you may then be able to explain why a world-famous violinist like Drenko should do his practicing on a violin that is most unmistakably out of tune.
How should I know what a man would do just before he commits suicide?
Suicide? This isn't suicide, Inspector. This is murder.
Timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
And now, Dr. Watson, what happened in that hotel room when Sherlock Holmes told Inspector Bernard that Drenko, the violinist, had been murdered and had not committed suicide?
Well, naturally, Inspector Bernard was rather surprised. As a matter of fact, it seemed to me he was a bit hussy about it.
But, Monsieur Holmes, you cannot fly in the face of all the evidence we see before us. The bottle of poison, clearly labeled. The suicide note, unquestionably in his own handwriting. Dr. Watson's medical evidence that the man had been dead at least an hour.
And the final confirmation of the man painting in the hall who tells us that no one entered or left this room until a few minutes ago. And against all this, Mr. Holmes, what have you to offer? A violin that is out of tune. Ah, zut alors.
Nevertheless, Inspector, it is the crux of the entire case.
But Holmes, how can you tell what a fellow like Grenko would have done?
I can assure you, Watson, that he would have done almost anything in the world except practice on this violin. No, Inspector, this was murder. I'll stake my reputation on it.
It is only your reputation, Monsieur Holmes, that makes me hesitate at all.
Give me 24 hours in which to establish how this murder was done and who did it.
Since it is you who ask it, Monsieur Holmes, very well.
Thank you. Come, Watson. We have some busy hours ahead of us. Good day, gentlemen.
Where are we off to now in such a hurry, Holmes?
The British Embassy.
The Embassy? Well, why on earth?
You evidently failed to notice during last night's reception that Lady Ashley left us very abruptly the moment Grenko joined our party. Her manner to him verged on rudeness, and that's so unlike Lady Ashley that I feel that an inquiry in that quarter may bear interesting fruit.
Mr. Holmes, the purpose behind this unexpected visit?
In just a moment, Sir Hubert. I'd like to have Lady Ashley present
yes,
when
Hubert?
I...
Yes, Hubert? My maid said you wanted to see... Why, Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson. I didn't know you were here.
I'm afraid our visit concerns a professional matter, Lady Ashley. You see, Dr. Watson and I have just come from the room of the late Monsieur Grenko.
The late Monsieur Grenko? I don't understand.
Grenko has been murdered, Lady Ashley. Quick, Watson, catch her.
Cynthia. It's quite all right. Nothing but a faint. You'll just ring for your wife's maid, Sir Hubert.
Yes, I guess her at once.
I must say, Holmes, you certainly broke the news rather brutally. She took it very hard.
Nonsense, Watson. What caused her to faint was relief. That was my object. I had to find out what her reaction would be.
Here, Annette. You and Mary help Lady Ashley up to her room. Put her to bed.
Oh,
just keep her quiet, please, and a cup of hot tea will do her no harm and see when she comes round.
And now, gentlemen, if you'll excuse me.
I'm sorry, Sir Hubert, but I must ask you to remain here with us for a few moments.
I don't understand that.
Sir Hubert, Lady Ashley's reaction to the news of Grenko's death was a good deal more pronounced than might be expected in the circumstances.
I haven't the faintest idea what you're trying to insinuate.
I insinuate nothing. I merely state facts. Would you prefer that I question her, or will you tell me what lies behind all this?
Very well, Mr. Holmes. But I should like to spare my wife as much as possible.
My only interest is in any light that she might be able to shed on the matter.
Miss Cynthia is a very young and very beautiful woman. Before we were married, she had, well, how shall I put it, fallen under the spell of this man, Grenko. Well, I've asked her no questions, but I know that he continued to have some strange hold over her. I had the impression that she hated seeing him and that he was forcing his presence on her on those occasions when he came as a guest in my house.
But I still don't believe anyone killed the fellow, but if someone did, it sounds like a good riddance.
Unfortunately, Watson, we are not concerned with the equities of the murder, but with its solution. Thank you, Sir Hubert. You've been extremely helpful.
Well, justice must be done, Mr. Holmes. But if ever I wish that your great powers might fail, it is now. I have no hesitation whatsoever in saying that I'm infinitely grateful for the murder of that swine Grenko.
Thanks. I'm rather trusting to the inspiration of music to assist me in resolving some of the more puzzling features of this case.
Well, at least you can't complain of a scarcity of suspects. First of all, Sir Hubert, for obvious reasons. Possibly Lady Ashley. Great Scott, Holmes.
What's the matter? Tea too hot?
No, but have you thought of the possibility that Frou Frou might have killed Grenko? After all, she might have been madly in love with him.
The possibility had occurred to me, but I discarded it.
Oh, discarded it. Hi, Joe. Look at this glass here on the table. It's positively vibrating from that high note.
A not uncommon phenomenon. As you must know, certain objects vibrate in harmony with certain notes. Watson.
Huh?
Get your coat. We promised to pay a visit to Marivaux's shop. I think this would be an ideal time to discharge that obligation.
Dingy little place, I must say. Founded 1821, eh? Looks as though they hadn't washed the windows since.
But full of priceless treasures. As Marlowe said, infinite riches in a little room.
I say, where's Marlowe? I don't like the looks of that customer over there. The one with that bushy black beard and theatrical cloak. He looks like one of those bomb-throwing fellows. What do you call them? Nihilist.
You must remember, Watson, that music appeals to oddly assorted people.
Mm-hmm.
Professor Moriarty, after all, knows no peer in his interpretation of certain of the Bach fumes.
Well, Mrs. Holmes and Dr. Watson, or is this other gentleman waiting?
No, I'm in no hurry.
It's no wonder the fame of your shop is worldwide, Monsieur Marivaux. I see you have some remarkable instruments.
You say about you the fruits of a lifetime of devotion to the violin. I must confess, Monsieur Holmes, that it pains me every time I sell one of my treasures.
I can well believe it.
And have you made any further progress toward a solution of Drenko's death?
I feel safe in saying that my investigation has gleaned a few pertinent facts.
Would it be indiscreet for me to ask what they are?
Not at all. You yourself were present when I made the curious discovery regarding Drenko's violin being out of tune. And only a short time ago, while I happened to be playing my violin, Dr. Watson made a remark which threw further light on the case. Didn't you, Watson?
Huh? Oh, yes, of course, yes.
I don't know what kind of a violin you possess, Mr. Holmes, but I'm sure you'll appreciate one magnificent example that I'd like you to try. A Guarnerius, the equal of any Strad I've ever seen.
I'm afraid it would be far beyond the reach of my purse.
But you at least owe yourself the pleasure, the great experience of playing it. Here it is. Isn't it beautiful?
Exquisite. If the tone's as mellow as that varnish...
Oh, but of course. Why don't you take it into my private office and try it? Hmm? No one will disturb you here.
Thank you. I've never had the good fortune to test the Guarnerius.
Dr. Watson, while Mr. Holmes is amusing himself, perhaps you'd be interested in some of these bows?
Bows? Oh, yes, yes, yes. What's that thing with Jigsaw, man?
There's more to it than that. There is only one family in all Italy, Dr. Watson, that possesses the secret of making a bow like this one.
Oh, it's all very fascinating, Mr. Marlowe, but Holmes must have made up his mind if he liked that fiddle by now. I know he wants to ask you some questions, and I felt that... Good heavens, what... He's lying on the floor. He must have fainted. Holmes!
I'm afraid he's dead. Quick, Dr. Watson, go for the police.
And give you a chance to plant a bottle of cyanide by my side?
What? Oh, no.
Watson, stay here and listen to Marivaux confess how he murdered Drenko.
You're alive.
No thanks to you. I took the trouble to dissect the violin you gave me, and then played one of the others here to lure you in.
He killed Drenko, but the suicide note.
Elementary, my dear Watson. I would hazard a guess that it was torn from the end of a letter to Marivaux referring to an unsatisfactory instrument, which was intolerable and which he couldn't endure any longer.
Holmes, Marivaux was nowhere near Drenko when he died.
Marivaux had left a very oddly constructed violin with Drenko, presumably last night, knowing that it was Drenko's habit to practice each morning from 8 till 10. Inside the violin, in place of a sound bar, Marivaux had put a thin glass vial containing cyanogen, the lethal gas which is identical in odor and effects with the cyanide.
Good heavens!
When Drenko reached the proper high note, the extremely thin glass vial cracked under the impact of the sympathetic vibrations, releasing the deadly fumes through the F-holes in the violin.
And the violin that Marivaux was delivering to Drenko when he discovered the corpse was...
Precisely, Watson. He merely left that one by the body, planted the note, and carried off the fatal weapon and all proof of the crime in his now empty case. He made only one error. He neglected to tune the violin he left.
Amazing, Holmes.
Listen very patiently, Monsieur Holmes, to your ingenious and utterly imaginary reconstruction. I suppose you can furnish a motive, too?
I'd prefer to spare Lady Ashley the ordeal, Marivaux. But I have no doubt that it was in you she confided that Drenko had been blackmailing her on the strength of their earlier romance.
But to convict a man of murder, you need something more than words. You need proof.
You seem to be overlooking this dissected violin on your desk, with which you attempted to murder me. I fancy that the sample of your handiwork with the vial of gas affixed therein will offer ample proof that...
You'll never send me to the guillotine. I'll kill myself first. But I'm going to trick you...
Drop that vial, Marivaux.
Precisely what I intend to do. Drop it, then release the fumes. They will put a speedy end to all three of us.
Hey, oh. Doctor, it's a Marivaux. Give me that vial. You do not want a broken arm. That's better.
Good heavens, it's a nihilist.
I'm an Inspector Bernard.
As you noticed when you commented on his beard and cloak, Watson, the inspector's tastes in disguise are a trifle flamboyant.
Now, Mr. Holmes, I must extend my thanks to you on behalf of the Sûreté.
Not at all, Inspector. Your promptness in acting in response to my message undoubtedly saved Watson's life and mine. Thank you.
Oh, no, Mr. Holmes. Thank you.
Oh, very well. Have it your way, Inspector.
Now, Mary Wolf, come along.
Phew, I say, it's rather too close a shave to suit me, Holmes. I say, that fellow Marivaux was very ingenious.
Quite. You know, Watson, I have one bitter regret concerning this case.
Regret?
I find that I have, despite all my protests, ended by acting for Drinker without a fee after all.
Was suggested by an incident in Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Illustrious Client. Nigel Bruce appeared by permission of California Pictures. Tom Conway through the courtesy of Eagle Lion Pictures. This is Joseph Bell speaking for Kremel Hair Tonic and Kremel Shampoo and inviting you to be with us next week at this same time.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio.